conversation starter to influencing the way we work, play, travel and survive, the weather has a massive impact on day-to-day life in Ireland.
But what drives the weather we experience in this country? And why does Ireland have such a varied climate?
Hello and welcome to the Met Éireann podcast. I'm Liz Walsh.
I'm Noel Fitzpatrick. And in today's episode, we are asking the question, what causes Ireland's weather?
To help us navigate our way through rotating planets, jet streams and air masses, we are delighted to be joined by Met Éireann meteorologist and forecaster, Pat Clark. Pat, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us today.
Well, it's great to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about your career in meteorology and how you got into it? And how long have you been at this job?
Well, I joined in autumn 1980. So if we do the sums, I'm in the autumn of my career. So it's been a roller coaster ride and a very enjoyable experience. I've been largely in forecasting all that time. And I did a degree in fluid dynamics in University College Galway. And of course, the weather is all about studying the fluid, which we call the atmosphere.
Did you go into fluid dynamics because you were really interested in the weather, or is it something that came after that?
It was just a topic I was interested in and was good at, so I enjoyed it. And afterwards, I realised that there was an application in meteorology, which was a great surprise and a great joy ever since.
So today's topic is what causes Ireland's weather. But I guess to understand that, we need to begin with the underlying processes, and then we can sort of narrow that down into the more local effects here in Ireland. So Liz and Pat, you're both meteorologists, both forecasters, and maybe I'll start with you, Liz. Why do we have weather?
Well, Noel, in a very basic sense, all weather, wherever you happen to be on the planet, is caused by the uneven heating of the Earth by the sun. It's obviously a bit more complicated than that, but that's the basic premise. We all know instinctively that it's hotter down near the equator and colder at the poles. And because nature likes balance, it's constantly trying to transfer the heat around the planet. And the way it does that is via the atmosphere and weather.
So as you say, we're sort of generally aware that it's warmer at the equator and it's getting cooler as we move away towards the poles. But why is that the case? Why should there be this uneven distribution of heat?
Well, it's down to a number of factors. No, first of all, the shape of the Earth approximates a sphere, so it's got curvature. What this means in practice is that the equator essentially gets a maximum concentration of the sun's energy or radiation, while at the poles, the angle that the sun's radiation hits, if you like, is much more oblique and spread over a much larger area. And if you add that, the tilt of the Earth at different times of the year, and then the fact that the Earth is rotating, you suddenly have quite a complex system of uneven heating.
You mentioned the Earth, the fact that the Earth is rotating. How much of an influence does that have on moving air around the planet?
Well, there are several forces, I guess, that cause the air to move. And the fact that the Earth is rotating is certainly a big factor, pretty crucial one, really. But the most important force in terms of the movement of air around us, i.e. the wind, is actually gravity. Like without gravity, there'd be no atmosphere at all. And what gravity does is it compresses the Earth's atmosphere and holds it close to the Earth. So gravity, in a sense, gives the air a weight. It creates pressure. If you think about it, air pressure or atmospheric pressure is simply the force exerted by the weight of the air. It's a measure of how heavy the air is above a point on the Earth. So if the air is lighter than its surroundings, you've got low pressure. And if the air is heavier than its surroundings, you've got high pressure.
So what's determining if we have high or low pressure at a certain location? I mean, is there a tendency towards one or the other in different parts of the globe?
That's actually exactly what happens. We do get a tendency towards one or the other in different parts of the Earth. At the equator, the energy of the sun is concentrated much more than it is further north or south. If you think about for a minute the idea of a hot air balloon, you heat the air and this causes the balloon to rise up. So the warm air in the balloon is less heavy and less dense than the air around it. It has lower pressure. It weighs less. And in the same way, at the equator, the sun is shining directly onto the equator, causes the air in the equatorial zone of the Earth to rise. So at the equator, we have low pressure.
When we hear low pressure, say in like the weather forecast, for example, we usually associate that with unsettled weather, you know, cloud and rain. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, you think about the equator and you think it's a warm place, but it's also quite a wet place. So you've got the warm air rising at the equator. As the air goes up into the atmosphere, it cools, a bit like when you get out of the shower and, you know, you see that the warm air has hit the cold mirror in your bathroom and it's clouded up. The same thing is happening in the atmosphere when warm air rises through the atmosphere. So what happens? It condenses to form clouds and rain. And so that's why all of the Earth's rainforests are actually located in the Earth's equatorial zone. There's a tendency to low pressure there.
Okay, so we've got this low pressure at the equator and we're seeing the opposite in the polar regions. Is that right? We have this a tendency to have high pressure in the polar regions.
Invariably, yes. If you think about it, the Earth's largest desert is actually Antarctica. And it's a desert because it doesn't get a lot of precipitation due to the dominant feature being high pressure, which is cold, dense, heavy, descending air.
But we've large deserts in other parts of the world as well, though, right? Is that due to high pressure as well?
Well, this is kind of where the rotation and the shape of the Earth comes in. So what goes up must come down, right? So if the Earth was a perfect sphere and it wasn't rotating, the air would rise at the equator and descend as cold air at the poles. But the Earth isn't a perfect sphere and it's rotating on its own axis. So the air still rises at the equator, but then it starts to descend as cold air. Well, it's observed to start to descend as cold air at around 25 to 30 degrees north and south. So because that air is heavy, it kind of squishes all the clouds and rain out. And so you get the desert zone and a tendency towards high pressure. And this process, it repeats itself in pretty much an equal and opposite fashion at the poles. So you've got the cold, heavy air at the poles creating high pressure. And then at around 60 degrees, because of the shape of the Earth and the rotation, this cold air starts to get a bit warmer and it starts to rise at around 60 degrees north. So you get these overturning masses of air going on the globe.
So I guess if we think about Ireland, we're at approximately, say, 53 degrees north or so. We're in between these regions of, say, high pressure at, as you say, 30 degrees north and then low pressure at 60 degrees north. What does that mean for us?
Well, Ireland lies in the upper end of this in between 30 to 60 gap. So near enough to the low pressure zone, but with high pressure tendency to the south. So this is the actual global circulation setup. Due to the Earth's rotation and the fact that the Earth is wider at the equator than the poles, the air inside a low pressure system actually flows anti-clockwise in the northern hemisphere. And because of that, you end up getting easterly flow near the equator. In a high pressure system, the air is flowing in the opposite way. It's flowing clockwise. So at around 30 or 40 degrees north, where you get the high pressure zone happening, the general airflow there changes the airflow to westerly or southwesterly. And then when you go up to 60, it goes back to easterly again. So as a result of all of this, the prevailing wind direction in the mid-latitudes is westerly.
So we have these regions or bands around the Earth, I guess, where we have air moving in different directions, and I'm presuming air with different temperatures, and maybe I'll go to Pat on this one. What's happening at the boundaries between these?
Scientists stroke meteorologists have figured out, maybe 50, 60 years ago, there was other process going on as well. And they discovered ribbons are rivers of fast-moving air in the upper atmosphere, which was the Japanese figured it out, but I think a German meteorologist gave the name jet stream to these fast-moving ribbons of air. And effectively, these interact with the movement of warm and cold air and move them around faster around the planet. It meanders like a sine or a sine curve, north and south. It buckles, but this was a huge concept when it was formulated and figured out. And then a lot of study has gone into, well, what exactly does the jet stream do, and how then does it affect these these large circulatory motions that are going on, these weather systems that form, does it move the low pressure areas faster or slower? What does it do to the high pressures? Does it go around them? Can it go through them? And well, in simple terms, low pressure systems interact very much with the jet stream. And when they do interact, the low pressure systems deepen, get more active, get more vigorous. The low pressure systems, if they're left to their own devices, might meander around with very little happening to them. But once they come in contact with these large rivers of fast moving air, the pressure falls and the air rises faster, and the whole system is propelled much faster across, say, the Atlantic Ocean. On the other hand, if there's a high pressure centre, you often find that the jet stream just meanders around it and doesn't really go through it. So really, the jet stream and low pressure have huge interaction, while jet streams and high pressure have little or none.
What's the significance of these curves or these bends occurring in the jet stream?
Well, the bends or buckling in the jet stream allows cold polar air to move south and warm tropical air to move north. So instead of this fast-moving ribbon or boundary of air keeping all the cold air to the north and all the warm air to the south, if the jet starts to curve or buckle, the system as a whole can become a bit more slow-moving, or you can get what we call blocked flow in the atmosphere. Now, by blocked, I mean that the normal westerly or west-to-east movement of the air in the mid-latitudes gets disrupted. And the other side of that is if the jet stream starts to buckle and bend, the air accelerates and decelerates around the bends in the flow, a bit like a roller coaster, really. Say you're going up over the bend in your roller coaster and you're being slowed down as you go up that hill, and then you go over the top and the roller coaster speeds up massively on the downhill. You get this huge energy release. So in the same way, the bends in the jet stream become these zones of potential development because there's energy being released, and they can inject a lot of energy into the low pressure systems that interact with it.
What also has been figured out in the overall circulation and the interaction of the jet streams, a lot of the low pressure centres that form east of the Carolinas on the east coast of America, or other systems that feed off the cold Rockies in Canada, if they catch, it's a bit like getting going to Limerick on the train from Dublin, and you have to make a connection at Limerick Junction invariably to go to Limerick. One of our colleagues, Michael McAuliffe, one time used to make this analogy. If the low pressure system makes its connection with the jet stream, the low pressure area is going to deepen. And invariably when they deepen, they zip across the Atlantic. And usually the preferred track is somewhere between Ireland and Iceland. And of course, when they come close to Ireland, we get the stormy weather. They go closer to Iceland and they get it there. So it's the interaction, making that connection. The low pressure centre we see in a weather map is at the surface, but the jet stream can go up how many thousands or tens of kilometres into the atmosphere, and it's meandering, it's moving, it's accelerating. Going back to your analogy of the, it's slowing down, going back to your analogy of the roller coaster. So sometimes our models might suggest the low pressure will make the connection with and will deepen. Other times, you know, they might be slightly off and it doesn't make the connection. So we're all the time watching to see, the particularly with bad weather, does the low pressure area interact with what's going on in the upper atmosphere? Because as we all know, it's all interdependent on each other. What happens at the surface, what happens in the upper air, and we have to understand both. So when a meteorologist is looking at a weather map, it's not just the surface weather they're looking at, which is important. We're also looking at the three-dimensional side of it. What's happening at 10,000 feet, 20,000 feet, 30,000 feet? What are the winds? What are the temperatures? And where's that fast-moving ribbon of air?
That's really interesting. So we're familiar with what conditions we have at the surface, but the upper air is essentially steering the conditions that we're experiencing at the surface. Is that right?
That's it. And one, we have the steering flow, and usually meteorologists look at a particular height for the steering flow. It's usually what we term 500 millibar flow, which is around 20,000 feet, give or take, depending again what's happening in the atmosphere. But we're also looking higher up in the atmosphere. Some of the strongest winds might be at 30,000 feet. And depending whether you're flying east or west across the Atlantic, if you can hitch a ride onto the jet stream, you might get from New York to Shannon in double quick time. depending, as long as you don't get the turbulence that goes with it.
Do we see much variation in the jet stream through the year or season to season?
We do. The jet stream in the middle latitudes is also known as the polar front, and it's stronger in the wintertime because the Earth is tilted away from the sun in the wintertime. So the temperature difference, therefore, is greater in the wintertime between the poles and the equator than it is in the summertime. So basically, the temperature difference that's driving the movement of the air, i.e. the wind, is also greater. And that, in effect, is why we get so many winter storms and not so many, although they can still happen, in the summer.
True. And we also have a phrase, are you on the warm side or the cold side of the jet?
Exactly, yeah.
And being and where you are is very important, because if with this meandering snake-like feature, and if you're on the cold side of the jet, and so if Ireland, say, and Britain are on the cold side of the jet, there's likely to be more going on. If you're on the warm side of the jet, there's likely to be more benign weather. So, you know, this concept of jet streams, polar fronts, and being on the warm and cold side, that's kind of been introduced to the Irish public over the last 10 or 20 years. Like Evelyn Cusick was always a great person when she was on TV to talk about the polar front and the jet stream. And a lot of people get it. A lot of people understand it.
You mentioned how if you were in Ireland or in New York and you're flying, that depending which direction you're going, it's going to slow you down or speed you up. So is the jet stream that we experience here in Ireland, is it generally flowing in the same direction?
It depends on how meandering the jet stream is. If the jet stream was in a straight line, it would be coming from the southwest and blowing northeastwards. But of course, in an example earlier on, sometimes it will belly up towards Iceland. So if the winds at the jet stream would be southwesterly. If it comes back towards us, the winds could be northwesterly. And of course, depending on the cycle, we could be in a very straight part of it with intense winds, or we could be in a meandering part with bends, as Liz said earlier on. So depending where we are vis-a-vis what part of the jet stream is over us at the time, and whether we're on the cold or warm side,
it all has an effect.
It all has an effect, exactly. Yeah.
So I guess if you're combining that with the fact that we heard earlier that Ireland is in this band of air where the wind or the air is generally coming from the west or from the southwest, so we've got a lot of westerly air coming over us, that must have a big impact on our climate.
There's a place in Canada, Edmonton in Alberta. It's at the same latitude as Dublin. Like 53.3. Okay. Now get this. The January average daytime max is -6 degrees. And the January average daytime max in Dublin is +8. And the minimum temperature average in January in Edmonton is -14.8 Celsius. Okay. And the record low is nearly -50 degrees. Okay. Dublin, that's not the minimum in January. The minimum, is usually around 2.4 degrees. Now, obviously, we can get frost in January, but average 2.4, and the record low was -9.5 at Dublin Airport. This is the whole thing, right? Edmonton is at the same latitude as Ireland, and it's in the global circulation. It's got the southwesterly or westerly winds.
Well, your point is well made, but equally well, I often make an analogy that Moscow and Cork are on the same latitude. And like your point about Edmonton, they get extremes.
Yeah.
We are temperate. We're in a temperate zone. And the weather in Ireland is generally of a temperate nature. We don't all the time get too many extremes. But of course, we have storms in the winter and we have some occasionally very warm, dry spells in the summer. But one of the reasons our weather is temperate compared to Edmonton and Moscow is because of the prevailing southwesters. It's coming over, we're a maritime nation, it's coming over the sea. But luckily, in general again, we don't get the extremes that Edmonton and Moscow get. It's very, very hot in the summertime, very, very cold in the winter. And also, it comes down to our location, as you said, maritime nation, surrounded by an ocean. And then we also get a variety of what we call air masses, bringing in different types of weather.
Proximity to the water, then, it seems to be a big moderating factor in our climate. Is that right?
Yeah, I think a lot of people would think, you know, because everybody thinks probably that Ireland's warm because of like the Gulf Stream in the ocean. But that's it's only part of the story,
answer.
Right?
Yeah, part of the story. Yeah. A significant part, but it's a part of the story. Yeah. Think about it. Again, if you go back to the mental picture of where Ireland is on the map, there is 6,000, 5,000 kilometres sea to the west of us, We have the Irish Sea, which is very small to the east of us. So if most of our weather is coming from the Atlantic over this broad expanse of ocean, it's going to pick up loads of moisture. And so that will help to activate our showers and also weather systems.
Can I ask what you mean by an air mass?
We would define an air mass as the characteristics. Where does the air come from? How much moisture does it hold? Is it, what's the temperature of that air? Is it warm? Is it cold? Is it cool? Has it modified itself in its travels as it's approached Ireland, as it's come in over Ireland? So,
it's basically the air. It's like a big mass of air that has the same characteristics. So it's
correct. Same broad characteristics, but where it's come from can be very, very important. Did it come from a tropical air mass from the south, from the southwest? Did it have a lot of heat to start with? Was it cold to start with? Did it have any chance to warm up? And we would identify these on weather charts. Air masses are very important. Where does the air come from and what's in that air mass? What are the characteristics? Are there lots of showers? Is there a lot of dry, warm, sunny weather?
Okay, Pat. Soft day. It's mild, misty, overcast. We've seen a lot of these days. With low cloud, outbreaks of rain and drizzle, fog, southerly winds, and there won't be any frost, even though it's winter. What air mass is it?
You could refer to it as tropical maritime, but tropical has a name that I prefer to call a mild maritime air mass that comes in from the relatively warm Atlantic as compared to where we are at the latitude we're at.
Okay, so it's tropical maritime. Where is that coming from typically?
Well, in general, that air mass would have originated to the south or southwest of Ireland at warmer climes. A lot of the low pressure center areas that come over Ireland that bring the weather that Liz described earlier would have originated somewhere in the Western Atlantic, and usually at about between 30 and 40 degrees north. And in general, that they would have probably started somewhere on the east coast of America. So if you think about, again, your atlas, that's to the south. The sea temperatures are higher. The air is warmer. And they're moving across the Atlantic. Okay, they're being modified to some extent because the Atlantic would be colder from about 45, 50 degrees north. The sea temperature would be a lot colder.
So what is that doing to the air mass then? Like, you know, so it probably starts out nice and sunny and then it travels over the oceans. What happens?
Well, you see, you know, warm air will rise and clouds will form and water vapour will form into clouds.
And that's why we get the mist.
And we get the mist and the drizzle. And whatever, but at the same time, that sort of, if it's a what we call a warm sector type day in the vernacular, you know, on the west coast of Ireland, if it's shrouded in low cloud, mist, and drizzle, you know, it's also wetting the ground. Largely, it's good for most crops except potatoes. That's another story. Potato blight because of the humidity, but as it's seen from torrential heavy rain, which can damage crops and can obviously lead to flooding as well and runoff. In farms and stuff like that. So it's a kind of a steady rain, usually not too heavy, but it does wet the ground and gives us our green grass.
Yeah, so we get a lot of days like that, I think, in Ireland. But another one, the beast from the east. So what air mass would you have called that, Pat?
Well, it's a cold air mass coming from a cold continent. So it'd be polar continental, might be the official term. But the beast from the east is really cold continental air. Usually from Northern Europe, from polar or Siberian areas. So when it comes across the North Sea, it picks up moisture. They get snow, a lot of snow showers, oftentimes on the east coast of England. They come across England, pick up more moisture in the Irish Sea. So when we get those easterlies in wintertime, it brings snow.
Yeah, I'm just visualising this here. You're saying how, so it's almost opposite to the tropical maritime. You've got, instead of warm air coming up and being cold, you've got quite cold air being brought over a warmer surface. So it's been heated from the bottom, essentially, a bit like putting cold water over a hot stove or something like that. You're getting this bubbling up of warm air. And that's what you're referring to as convection.
That's literally what happens en masse. You know, so when you see those showers coming in off the Irish Sea in that beast from the east and all the showers feeding in onto the east coast, that's what it is. It's the pot of boiling water bubbling.
But there's also another added factor as well as all that's going on. The temperature of the air and the ground over the landmass of Ireland itself and that setup would be very cold as well.
Yeah. So what happened when What happened in March 2018, though? So we had the beast from the east, but we also had Emma coming up from the south. What happened there?
Well, there was two different systems. There was an active weather system, a low pressure centre down over Spain, and it moved into the Bay of Biscay and moved northwards. So that brought a certain amount, its own characteristics. In particular, there was a lot of mild air. So
it was tropical, tropical, inverted commas.
But it clashed with the so-called beast from the east, which is exceptionally cold air. And when the warm air clashed with the cold air, there was going to be only a bad outcome. And as it turned out, there was a lot of snow over the eastern half of the country, and particularly kind of eastern coastal counties of Ireland and southeastern coastal counties. Leinster in the main was hit by kind of a double whammy. We had a lot of snow, and we had a lot of snow on the ground for a good number of days, if not weeks afterwards. So it had a more lasting effect, even when the system itself had petered out and moved away. It had left disruption behind. But you haven't mentioned a couple of other air masses that we get sometimes, which actually one of them brings a lot of warm weather, which is the tropical continental.
That's right.
And
it's my favourite one.
Well, it's the favourite one for most people as well, because usually we get temperatures well over 20 degrees, and we get a lot of sunshine. Over time, it probably changes into hazy sunshine. And maybe when it's time for it to leave and move on, we get some thunderstorms often at the end of it as well. But and people often refer to the Spanish plume. But usually there's always warm air over Spain. I mean, for example, Seville is known as the oven of Europe. If anyone has been to the south of Spain, Seville is one of the hottest places in Spain. And the Spanish plume is this parcel of warm air that gets moved northwards in the flow patterns aloft, and the winds, usually south-southeasterly winds over Spain, brings this so-called Spanish plume over Ireland and Britain. Equally well, if it originates further south over Morocco and over the Sahara, and we get some precipitation out of it, like it can generate some showers, we can get dustings on our cars, for example. Which they're similar types of setups, except the origin is one is over the Sahara and the other is over Spain.
So on a hazy sunny day that we often get here, so you're saying that like that haze and that dust is actually coming, has been picked up over Spain or picked up over Africa and carried all the way to Ireland?
If that's where the air masses come from, we will get hazy sunshine for other reasons as well, because of high clouds called cirrus that can, you know, temporarily black out the sun. But if there's embedded dust in it, it has come from southern climes.
Are there any of these sort of air masses or setups in the atmosphere that as a forecaster you're kind of dreading seeing coming, or you know that they're particularly difficult to forecast? Or
Well, over the years, the one thing that would not difficult to forecast, because we've got way better. I'm nearly 40 years at this job, and the one thing I've noticed about forecasting the weather, when I started back in 1980, it was a mixture of an art and a science. And a lot of the older forecasters were very good at forecasting. But as Mick Gilligan famously said to me, a famous old Irish meteorologist, I know how to forecast, but maybe don't know so much meteorology. As time has gone by, it's become more scientific. The weather models have become more accurate. And forecasting is you still need the human element. You still need the trained meteorologist to interpret all the science that's there, because oftentimes it's conflicting. But the one thing that is what would worry me is if there's severe storms on the way, and the potential for what might happen to people and to property. So one of the focuses we've had in Metairn over the last number of years is to nail that down as best we can, which brings us back into what, you know, the job we do. And one of the things we've done is to name storms and stuff like that. Liz referred to it earlier on, the jet stream is much stronger in the wintertime. So we get a reasonable number of storm developments very close to Ireland. And, you know, it could be 10 or 12 on a typical year, you know, and, you know, what that impact might have. And can we forewarn of that impact? It's great if you're not warning but forecasting fine, dry, sunny weather for most people, unless you're very fair skinned and you get sunburned, but which is another issue. But the one thing that the adverse weather, warning of adverse weather, is the one of the most important things we do, and that's the thing that, you know, you're always watching out for.
From your years as a forecaster, is there a particular event or forecaster decision you had to make that really stands out?
There's really just one event. There's just so much has gone on over even forecasters' life throughout the winter and summer. They might have had 10 storms in one winter. I was on the day of Ophelia, and I was the chief kind of senior forecaster on the day, and I had to run the forecast office on the day. And we had a couple of our meteorologists on TV that day, with others dealing with the media. So we had to get that story, keep that story going, evolve that story, change that story. People were still running with the guidance from the Hurricane Centre, but that had changed because the remnants of the hurricane were now in our waters. So that was an interesting day. In recent memory, that sticks out. But as I say, when you're at the job nearly 40 years, there's been a lot of days like that when maybe the media wasn't so much media around at the time, and everything is instant, which is different now. So you're doing your forecasting in a modern setup where, you know, you're getting instantaneous pictures back from, say, storm damage somewhere or heavy rain somewhere. In the past, you might have to wait till the next day to find out, you know, what exactly happened. Now there's instant feedback. So you have to monitor all the social media outlets as well, because it's kind of there's a concept called WOW coming out on board, whereby trying to interact with the public and get them to feed in more quickly into the system so you can adapt and change the forecast. So it's basically involving the public in real time. For example, if you've got heavy showers in Ireland and they turn into hail, hail is ice falling onto a road, so that's highly dangerous. So if you can get an instant report for that, it mightn't be showing up at our weather station. We're worried and concerned about it, but when you actually get a report of something like that, well then, okay,
you know that what you've been thinking is correct,
yeah. and you can re-emphasize that aspect or issue a warning for that aspect.
The whole thing about it is that it's been observed. You know, that's it's the whole idea of, like, you know, the science that we do is what we observe. Like, the reason why, like, all the laws we talked about earlier are there, it's because it's what we observe. It's not something we made up. It's kind of we put forward a hypothesis, there's a theory, and then we observe it in action.
It's ground truth. If somebody reports a wind of 120 kilometres per hour and you're forecasting that, but your weather stations haven't picked it up, so, well, okay, that validates that. Or if it's higher than you expected, well, you can always adjust the forecast to that. So you're getting real information in real time, observed by real people. And, you know, that's invaluable.
Mm. So there are certainly multiple and variable causes of Ireland's weather. Our latitude, the fact that we're an island surrounded by the sea. But it's also to do with how the polar front jet stream is operating and that global circulation that I talked at length about, giving us our prevailing wind. But that's about all we have time for today. But for now, thanks very much, Pat.
Thank you, Pat. Time now for this month's climate summary. So we'll go over to Paul Moore, who has the details on how our weather has been in Ireland this past June.
Here are the highs and lows for June 2019 based on data from Met Éireann's 25 synoptic weather stations. June was cooler than average at all stations. The last time most stations were cooler than average for June was in 2015. The first 3 weeks of June were mostly cool and unsettled, as a blocking area of high pressure over Greenland steered a cool air mass over Ireland. It warmed up during the final week of the month as a plume of very warm air, which originated in North Africa, moved up over Ireland. The sunniest place for the month was in the southeast, where Johnstown Castle, County Wexford, recorded 208 hours of sunshine, 31% above average. While the station that recorded the least sunshine for the month was Knock Airport, with just 125 hours, 14% below average. The wettest place in June was Ballyhays, County Cavan, with 115.6 millimetres of rainfall, which is 70% above average. By contrast, the driest place was Maesteg, County Galway, with 40.3 millimetres, 51% below average. The wettest day of the month was at Cork Airport on Sunday the 23rd, with 39.1 millimetres of rainfall, which is Cork Airport's wettest June day since 2008. The highest monthly mean temperature for June was at Shannon Airport, County Clare, with 13.6 degrees Celsius, which is 0.9 degrees Celsius below its average. While the lowest mean temperature was 11.7 degrees Celsius at Knock Airport, 0.5 degrees Celsius below its average. The maximum temperature reported was at Shannon Airport on Thursday the 27th with 28.4 degrees Celsius, followed closely by Valentia Observatory, County Kerry, with 28.0 degrees Celsius on the same day. The lowest temperature for the month was reported at Markcree, County Sligo on the 15th with 1.1 degrees Celsius. There was a significant amount of lightning activity during the month, especially during the thundery breakdown at the end of the very warm period on Saturday the 29th in the eastern half of the country.
Thank you, Paul. And Paul will be back again next month with the climate report for July.
that brings us to the end of this episode. Our thanks again to Pat Clark for joining us in the studio, Alan Bennett at Headstuff, and Gavin Gallagher and the communications team at MetEireann. Thanks to you, the listener, for tuning in. And as always, if you'd like to find out more about today's topic, you can check out the information on our webpage at met.ie/podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on the webpage or wherever you normally get your podcasts from, and get in touch using the MetEireann Twitter and Facebook pages, using the hashtag MetEireannPodcast, or by emailing us at podcast@met.ie.
Next month, we'll be talking hurricanes with John Cangelosi from the National Hurricane Centre in Florida. We hope you'll join us for that, but for now, we will leave you with the sound of the MetEireann Choir, the Isobars, and their rendition of Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head. Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Raindrops keep falling on my head, and just like the guy whose feet are too big for his bed, nothing seems to fit. Those raindrops keep falling on my head, they keep falling. So I just did me some talking to the sun, and I said I didn't like the way he got things done. Sleeping on the job, those raindrops keep falling on my head, they keep falling. But there's one thing
I know, the blues they send to meet me won't defeat me.
It won't be long till happiness steps up to greet me. Doo-doo, doo-doo, raindrops keep falling on my head, but that doesn't mean my eyes will soon be turning red. It's not for me, 'cause I'm never gonna stop the rain by complaining, because I'm free. Nothing's worrying.